Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper for 200 episodes! We have hit that 200 mark, and as we promised, we have a huge show in store for you as we will be looking back at the decade of films in cinematic history. So, of course, I am with, always, Mr. Spencer Williams. How you doing?
What's up?
We are not alone, though, because we have with us producer and host of Video Game Bang, Mr. Corey Vincent.
Alone, you never were.
I went and saw Star Wars for the second time. I'm sorry, guys.
But as great as excited as we are to have Corey, we are bringing the band back together for you folks, and we brought in a special guest who has been on a little bit of a hiatus for about 6 months,
wow,
but is back to bring his big brain, Mr. Chad Will... No, Riley!
Hey, guys! It's a new decade, but the same dumb jokes are still here.
And the same dumb people.
Oh, man, it's been a while. How you doing?
I'm great. I got married. Life is wonderful. We're about to turn the page to a new year. I'm excited. Although, I'm not excited about having, like, the dinky mic. A guy steps away for 6 months, and then you stick him with the dinky mic. I feel like I need to be at the kiddie table at a holiday really party.
Can I just say I'm honored to be here on the reunion episode? Like, this is big for me. I'm probably the Filmlosopher's biggest fan, and it makes me excited to see Chad and Eddie rocking the mic together.
Oh, this is going to be fun. So before we get into the show and all the fun we have in store, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Looking in the rearview mirror and seeing where we've been, the Filmlosopher's podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check the top billboards for movies, then head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pocket Cast, and...
Pandora! Sorry.
Have you finally followed us on social media? We don't have just blank profiles anymore.
Hey, I told you I was going to work on that.
I unfollowed you. Does that count?
No, that's not true. I didn't.
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to find out more about all the great things we have in store for the next decade. Finally, check out our 200 episodes we have over on our website. Listen to the entire list of fun and cinematic education over at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We have hit the milestone of 200 episodes, and it is so exciting.
Incredible. It only took us 11 years.
We were doing 10 episodes a year or something, 20 episodes. No, and the great thing is the fact that everybody in this room has had a huge hand in making this podcast possible, from having Corey give us the opportunity to record in his studio and to grow and be a part of the great things that they have going on, to Spencer coming in, and then, of course, having Mr. Chad Riley as a co-host for so long and having him just be the brains of the operation and me just the jibber-jabber and him kind of redirect me and kind of like smack me back onto the trail. So everybody in this room has made a large and huge impact in what this podcast is. So a big thank you to everybody here as well. And give yourselves a applause. Good job, everybody. Yeah, just awesome work.
Clap,
awesome.
Everyone in the studio audience.
But we have a great show in store, as we're going to be going over something a lot bigger than what we thought about. We thought about a year, and then we were like,
we
you know what?
Talked about a year.
We prepped for a year.
We?
Yeah, we. The royal we.
That sounds about right.
And we figured, you know what, why not amp up the tunes a little bit and actually go in the direction of what is the best of the decade. So I know we've been doing podcasts for what seems to be 3 years. We've been podcasting for about 3 years, you'd say, Chad?
Gosh, I can't remember. I thought it was three, but then like one of the movies that I have as a reference that we did cover says that it was released in 2015. So
which movie is that?
I don't know. Hardcore Henry.
So here's the thing. I thought, didn't we cover Mad Max Fury Road?
No, we watched it. We didn't cover it on the podcast. We actually got our start on an episode of Video Game Bang.
That's right.
With the first Deadpool movie.
That's right.
So in a way, that was the first, like, we'll call it a, what is it, a backdoor pilot in television?
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah, it's a spinoff.
There you go.
It's like Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Schlemiel, Schlemada, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know.
Schlemada.
I don't know what they say. It's
Schlemanda, Schlemanthony. Sorry, Rick and Morty reference. So, but like I said, we're going to be reviewing the entire decade. So this year has come and gone in a flash, as well as this decade. So we've had an amazing time in cinema and movies just for the last 10 years. And so as we figured, as this year is coming to a close, this episode is going to drop on January 1st. So with a new year comes a look back on what has been great and what to expect forward. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at all the great films that have come and gone in the last 2010s. So I know everybody here has put in their efforts into creating their lists.
Yep.
Yeah.
Spencer's looking at me side-eyed with his glasses.
I'm just saying I had to rewrite a list.
So you guys going to tell everybody what happened, or do you want me to break the news?
Go for it.
So typical Eddie.
Typical me.
We call him Fast Eddie. He told everybody that it was going to be the best of 2019.
It's true.
And then when we got into the studio, he backed that thing down, flipped it, and reversed it. And said, hey, he got inspired. He got inspired, man. He that's how Fast Eddie works.
Well,
he,
there's nothing wrong with inspiration. It's just when you don't tell the people that
he wants to keep us on our toes.
Hey, I told you it was in the file. So I'm just...
Oh, it was in the file that sent me no notifications when you update things. That's great. It's just great.
I'm going to level with y'all.
Okay.
I've listened to like two of your episodes since I left. Today was my like cram for the exam catch up. I listened to five episodes today. And let me tell you, you are out of control. Inspiration overrules preparation every single week.
You like those games I spring on Spencer that we used to do?
The worst. Those are the worst games.
That's the thing, though. Most podcasters can't handle that kind of change. But the Filmlosophers, you're expected when you walk through those doors to be a scholar. That's why I did my homework, and I'm ready to go. I'm normally a video game guy, you know, which I know, you know, movie people look down on the video game people, all right? We haven't contributed the most to your art form. Let's just put it that way, all right?
I don't know. We got a lot of people from our team going to your team, so I don't know about that.
I'm sorry for Mario, guys. I apologize, all right? We did that to you, and that will never make up.
And then we have Sonic to look forward to. So.
But we're giving you Witcher, all right? Which is a book, I mean, but still video games.
It was a book first.
But it wouldn't have been a Netflix series if it That's wasn't true. An amazing That's video game. So we're taking credit for that one.
There you go.
We need the win. That's all I had to say.
Okay. There you go.
Apology from gamers to the movie people.
There you go. You know, that we're bridging gaps here. Yeah. We're making amends.
That's what we're
West getting. And East Coast rappers, you can do the same.
Oh my gosh.
So we're going to take a look at certain genres from the last decade, and we're going to go ahead and throw our thoughts into what fit the best of that genre during the decade. Now, obviously, 10 years is a lot, so if we have a few runners-up or a few extra on the side, if it's not just one, that's fine. You know what? Everybody can have multiple faves. It's okay.
Okay.
So we're going to do best genres, and then at the end, we'll do a personal favorite. Does that sound cool, guys?
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
All right. So to kick this thing off, let's start out with best action of the decade. So in all honesty, I think Corey hit it on the nail when he said, the 2010s weren't exactly the best era for certain types of genres, but I do have to admit, action is where I think some of the brunt of the best for the 2010s really shined. So for me, I know there's been a slew of different ones, and I'll go and kick this off with, I think one of my favorites had to be Baby Driver in 2017. Like, I absolutely adored Baby Driver from not only its cinematic perspective of what it brought for the expertise of driving and the fun storyline, but even the soundtrack. Like, I have the soundtrack on vinyl, and I listen to it at least every week. And it's hilarious. Egyptian disco is my jam, I gotta say. So I don't know. Did you guys ever see that film? Well, I know some of us have seen it. Well,
I've never seen it.
I knew it.
I've never seen the movie.
We reviewed it and you lied to me.
That's right.
I only know of it from the episode you guys did of it. Yeah, I remember listening to that one. I never saw it myself.
Such a good movie, though.
It really was. Hmm. It's surprising, too, because you find out it's Edgar Wright, and Edgar Wright's been really more known for his comedy. You know, the Cornetto trilogy with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. And I don't really, I mean, he did throw his hat in for a little bit for the Ant-Man movie, but then that went away real quick.
Well, he went away from it.
Oh, I thought they sent him away.
No, they had creative differences. Okay. It could have been one or both parties.
Well, either way, his ability to translate whatever kookiness and craziness is in his brain and create Baby Driver with Ansel Elgort. That's a really weird name. Kevin.
What?
Ansel Elgort? Isn't that it?
Well, now you got my mind all twisted around.
I believe that's his
name. Something like that. It just doesn't sound right coming out of your mouth.
That's because I don't know how to say it. But it also has, like, John Hamm. John Hamm!
Oh,
yep.
God. Oh, it's over now.
Baby, let's go. John Hamm is, to me, what Guillermo del Toro is to Eddie, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I mean, they're kind of both
legit,
up there,
although Eddie has also hopped on your bandwagon for the past 2.5 years, so.
He's a Hammite.
There you go, I'm a Hammite.
I've showed him the Ham.
You know, back in the day, we used to do a special feature called, what is it, Fantasy Cast?
I love that series.
Right? Like, we had a little Mariah Carey deal back.
We still do that, apparently.
You
what
do?
Do you mean, apparently?
John Hamm always made an appearance.
That's true.
Be it male, female, human, animal, didn't matter.
Object, like, who would be a great tree? John Hamm.
John Hamm.
They're just perfect.
He's just the ultimate father figure.
He is. I mean, seriously, who wouldn't want John Hamm as a father?
Or mother figure. Or, like,
tree
man's
figure.
Best friend.
Tree figure. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
Lily James is also in this film. It's Ansel Elgort. So,
thanks for clarifying.
There you go.
I appreciate it.
And then, obviously, Kevin
Speaking
Spacey.
Another language.
I know it sounds like a Star Wars pilot.
Jamie Foxx, by the way. Jamie Foxx.
And Jamie Foxx.
I can hear Jabba the Hutt.
What about you, Chad? What did you get for 2019 action films?
2019 action films.
The
decade. This is what he originally asked.
The decade. The decade.
Let it be noted, he originally asked us to make a list of 2019 films. And on the top of my action list for 2019 is, of course, Avengers .. Assemble. Whispered. Avengers Endgame was the top of my 2019 list. Yeah. But Captain America has unseated himself for the decade because I went with Captain America the Winter Soldier for my overall action pick for the 2010s decade.
And that one has like a whole mixed bag of things going on. Not just like action, but like you were saying before we went
Good
on air.
Heavens. Like, I mean, it's everything. I know thriller. It appears on another list or two, you know, down the road. But one of the things that I love the most and why I put it in the action category specifically was the stunt fighting choreography in that movie. I could watch like the takeover of the Lemurian Star, which is the ship in the beginning, essentially. I could watch that sequence on an endless loop for an entire like day or two without getting tired of it. The fight choreography is so cool.
Yeah.
The way they have him use the shield, the way they have him use like his arms and his legs and all of it.
Is that the one with George St. Pierre?
I was just going to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is he, real quick, what does he play in that film? Like, I believe he's supposed to play some kind of villain.
Oh, yeah. George St. Pierre?
The Leaper or something?
Oh, what's gosh, yeah. Batroc the Leaper.
Yeah, there
okay,
we go.
Okay.
Batroc.
Yeah.
Batroc.
He's legit probably the best fighter of all time. So it was kind of cool that they threw him in there. And he did his patented Superman punch. Like that. So as an MMA nerd, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, that's GSP. Oh, he did the Superman punch! Like, it was super cool that they stayed true to, like, his ability.
And it's so good because, like, there's just so much happening in that movie, but it's not, like, overdone.
Yeah.
There's, like, calm private moments like Steve and old Peggy. Come on now. When she like forgets that she's already re-met him or whatever and it's all fresh and she's in all the age makeup, Haley Atwood.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I think that's one of those films that, like Chad said, it'll probably reappear on someone else's list, but between the action, the drama, the political thrillers of like having espionage and someone being a mole inside a government organization and, you know, and then it's Robert Redford. I mean, you always know anything Robert Redford is in, it's got to be government, you know, cover-ups and whatnot. So What about you, Spence? Who'd you get on the list?
All right, I've got two. Endgame, because, of course.
Yeah.
And then I kind of went the opposite direction, and I put Hobbs and Shaw, because that movie was the most hilarious action movie I think I've ever seen in this decade, because it's just insane, with Idris Elba being Black Superman, just jumping and punching through things.
Yeah.
And then you've got the comedy between, like, The Rock and
Jason Statham.
Yeah. Like, it's just such a good mashup. I've never seen anything else in that series still, but I was really impressed with this movie.
Spencer is now considering watching the Fast and the Furious movies just based on the one film that's a spinoff from the Fast.
Don't do it, Spencer. Don't.
And you've
seen the best they have. Don't go back.
To be quite frank, he's not lying. That is the exact, like, this movie is so far removed from the original cast and everything, and it's still so much better. So, but it's true. That movie came out what? It came out this year?
Yeah.
It was a really good movie. To be honest, I didn't think the dynamic between the two was going to work as well, but it actually does. Like, Jason Statham's stoic nature with The Rock's kind of flexibility as being both the funny guy as well as the straight man. It works for me.
It's definitely a risk to take something that's like the comic relief of a different movie. So, like, you're peppering it in and then, like, make that the focus. You're definitely running a risk when you do that.
Yeah, completely. What about you, Corey?
I got two as well.
All right.
And they're both Marvel movies.
There we go.
Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Well, then.
I sense a pattern.
I do.
Just like Eddie, I have the vinyl for both.
Yeah.
And I listen to those regularly because I think the soundtrack, like, really kind of carries the story. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I would really always was a classic rock nerd in, like, high school and middle school. So I've always, like, looked deep into the songs. Like, what are they trying to tell me, you know, in these songs? And then when you – that – movie did such an incredible job pulling some of those gems from, like, the 60s era and 70s and giving them, like, repurpose. Like, you, if you go into just the songs, you're like, oh yeah, that's a pretty dope song.
Yeah.
But then when you hear, like, Break the Chain at that part where he's you know fighting against his dad and stuff, and that's, like, heavy stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So they went deep into, like, the mythology of the song. So me just loving the music, and I wasn't even a fan of Chris Pratt before this series. It made me a huge Chris Pratt fan.
And to be honest, the film itself made people fans of Chris Pratt. Like, people were, like, low-key Parks and Rec fans of Chris Pratt, but that was, like, a whole
He always played the douchey boyfriend.
Yeah, he always played the guy that was, like,
who didn't deserve the girl.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think in this aspect, like, him transforming into Star-Lord and becoming ultimately everybody's most relatable superhero in one sense or another.
We have I don't know. There's a lot of conversations that we have on Video Game Bang where it gets like, you know, if you don't like something, well, maybe it wasn't made for you. You know, maybe this wasn't the thing that was made for you.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, you know, you can't get mad at something that wasn't made something, you know. There's a lot of different people out there, so there's things that cater to their interests. I felt like this movie and series was made for me. Like, I'm super nostalgic about, like, you know, past decades and stuff. And the joke in two where there's the Zune pops up,
yeah,
you know, and they break his walkman, they give him a Zune. That joke was for me. I loved my Zune to death. I rebuilt my Zune. I found my Zune years later that was broken. I bought a new battery, replaced it just because I loved the Zune. That joke. The kids won't even understand that. So when I saw that, I was like, universe, thank you for this movie that you have gifted me.
And honestly, that's a great point, because of any of the MCU films that we've seen to date, in terms of, like, before they came out, Guardians of the Galaxy was the one that was the biggest risk. Like,
yeah,
it definitely could have not worked because they weren't, like, super well-known characters. They really chose that one because, number one, James Gunn had a vision and they said, okay, good, you're in the driver's seat. And thankfully, they left him there. And they didn't, like, the studio didn't take over and, like, you know, water it down or anything.
Yeah.
But also, like, in the greater architecture of the MCU, they're like, well, we've got to get into space somehow beyond Thor. Because at that point, Thor was kind of the history book of the set. in a way.
Yeah.
And then, like, Guardians was there, like, well, we have to get into space because, you know, Thanos. So, but yeah. It definitely could have flopped.
I don't care what y'all say about Baby Yoda. Baby Groot is the GOAT. If we're talking about, like, baby things, Baby Groot wrecks Baby Yoda's face all day, every day. I mean, ultimately, they'd be friends, but...
They'd be best friends.
I'm team Baby Groot.
You're just team Baby right now. So yeah. let's just be honest. You're just team Baby.
I'm Baby.
So moving forward, let's go ahead and truck along with best sci-fi / horror of the decade. Now, the unique and interesting part about this particular genre is that half of this table here doesn't really adhere to most horror films.
I'm glad you added sci-fi to this. I
specifically added the sci-fi / part for you guys because I know I've been working and Chad kind of mentioned it a little bit before going on air. I've been working with Spencer and showing him like a little bit more of like some of the more intelligent horror films, which to Chad's retort to that, there are no intelligent horror.
I've not listened to a single one of those episodes and I'm not likely to. I still love you guys.
But I know...
It's okay. They scare me too, Chad. I hate horror movies. And I'll just straight up say it. I'm a baby. That's why. They scare me. I don't want to have nightmares.
Jumping into best sci-fi / horror films, I want to throw it to Spencer. I want you to start it out, Spence. Did you have a favorite or a few runners-ups?
Yeah, there's three in this category because they got mishmashed together.
Sorry.
It's fine. All right. So for the horror side, my favorite was Get Out. Because that movie, like, that spoke to me on levels.
That was made for you?
Yes, like, that was made for me.
He's got the vinyl at home and everything.
No, that one was just such a good, creepy movie that just had me scared of people for a while.
Do not stir tea or coffee around Spencer. Oh, no. With a teaspoon.
I don't know if you've been to Spencer's house lately.
Out.
He has only plastic spoons in his house.
I'm like, no one's going to take over my body on my watch. Some on the sci-fi side, I put down Interstellar and Rogue One.
Good choice with the Rogue One.
Rogue One
was just a masterpiece. Like
it really is
like kind of the best of the Disney era of Star Wars.
I mean, in a way, it did Star Wars better than most of the Star Wars we've seen for a while,
which is so insane.
I almost choked on spit with that one. It's like, never has a truer statement been said.
Yeah, I love that one.
And the great thing about going back to what you're saying with Get Out, Get Out was such like a like when people are asked like, how's this gonna happen, like you have the comedic genius of Jordan Peele coming into the horror genre, and like, all right, well, we're gonna give you opportunity to do this and go ahead, and he's like, okay, and he did it, and people are like, is this supposed to be a funny movie or a horror movie?
You know, I think that's a theme that we could say also happened with the Joker movie, right? That was the director who was known for doing comedies.
Yeah.
And then he comes out of the woodwork with this crazy, polarizing, like depressing movie. And
true.
And I think if you study like most stand-up true comedians of the era, that comedy comes typically from a dark, scary place.
I think you're hitting it on the head because... knowing Jordan Peele's ability with his writing credits in Key and Peele, a lot of the more darker skits that happened were usually written by Jordan Peele. And I had to go back and like double check and like look through some of the skits like, all right, written by Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
And so you know that it hails from somewhere. But like something like this goes to like even kind of a deeper area in most people's lives. Like this is like straight up like almost out of experience, and I don't want to say out of experience, but it feels like it, you know.
Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah. No, there's a simple answer to that one, Eddie.
I don't mean literally
but you know,
but the idea of it is pretty creepy, and obviously the metaphorical implications it has, yeah, they're profound and obvious in a lot of different areas that are happening still today. But the idea of like, all right, well, we're going to kind of implant this person's you know, this white person's brain into a black person's, like, you know, what it was like, who thinks like that? But yeah. I mean, obviously we're glad because and then obviously, like Corey said, Rogue One, by far one of the best Star Wars films out there, totally bridged the gap to create that kind of seamless feeling for Star Wars Episode IV. And aside from that weird looking, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin and Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia scenes, like everything else is great.
Yeah, but that's like, the nice thing about that is it's so minimal that, like,
no, completely.
You can totally,
it's totally forgivable.
No, true, yeah. But from a technical standpoint, I mean, yeah, we are awful. Philosophers. This is what we do.
Yeah, but Donnie hey. Yen, though, so...
Haters gonna hate. Yeah. Donnie Yen.
So that, like, made up for any shortcomings they may have had.
Corey, what's that quote that Chirrut has inside?
I'm one with the Force. The Force is with me. I'm one with the Force. Is that it?
That's so it. Good. I just mentioned that because that was a question we had on our Star Wars trip.
Which was a banger of a success thanks to the Filmlosophers. Man, you guys came up with some good questions.
That's right. Tossing it over to Mr. Chad, what did you get for sci-fi?
Well, any longtime listener of the podcast is not going to be surprised at this pick. I picked Arrival, 2016.
Great movie.
Which didn't sit well with everybody because it kind of billed itself to be more of a like horror, thriller, alien thing. And it was really a much more nuanced, like, I don't know, like kind of warm fuzzy kind of sort, like, it just,
yeah,
it was such a deeper story. It was beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta give credit to still one of the best songs I've ever heard,
Max,
which
Richter?
Is called On the Nature of Daylight by, yeah, Max Richter. I actually heard it yesterday on a commercial for Death Stranding.
Oh.
And I'm like, no way, this song, like, it brings,
mm-hmm,
and I hadn't heard the song until the movie. And they bookend the movie. They start it in the, yeah, beginning, and they bring it back in the end. There are no words for how well composed from,
yeah,
start to finish it is. Is there some weird stuff in the middle that maybe could have been done differently? Sure.
Sure.
But, like, in terms of an overall cinematic experience, we had a friend with us in the theater, and at the end of the movie, when the credits are rolling, she turned and looked and at both Eddie and I and was like, are you crying? Are there tears in your eyes? And I was like, legit, like,
yeah,
welled up with tears. Not because of the story definitely has like a tug on the heartstrings kind of component to it, and a beauty, like a bittersweet kind of beauty.
Yeah.
But I was actually tearing up because of how, like, complete the story was. Like,
yeah,
you rarely see a story so effectively rendered from start to finish that, like, just the sheer craft of telling a story well literally got me in the feels.
And the thing is, here's the unique thing about that statement is that Chad was not the only person that had, you know, that piece of dust in their eye. And
oh, heck no.
There was, we sit, so I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Sacramento critic kind of community, but there's some, like, pretty hard-nosed people. And they're like, eh, that movie was whatever.
Yeah, they see every movie,
yeah,
so they all kind of blend together over time.
And never have I seen a whole row of these critics, like, legitimately rubbing their eyes, wiping their eyes, grabbing their tissues. And for good reason, because, like Chad said, the film's story itself derives itself on the mindset of completion, of having that circular thinking and it's a beautiful story, and to have that mimicked as well in the actual film's story and have that sense of completion is pretty rare, to be quite honest. So
very rare.
It's an amazing movie. So what about you, Señor Corey?
So I was doing some research on this one because it, you know, I realized I don't really watch a lot of sci-fi. I don't watch any horror, so that was out immediately. And the only sci-fi I love is Star Wars, and that's been a giant letdown of the last 10 years. So I do agree that of all that stuff, Rogue One was good. That was really good. But all right.
Oh,
I'm giving,
gosh,
it to Interstellar. I thought that movie was incredible. And here's a bad thing. I didn't even see it in the theaters. I saw this like a year ago on a plane. So I saw it on a little tiny screen with my, you know, broke cheap ass earbuds. And still, this movie, I left that flight, just my mind was blown. I loved everything about it. I'm a huge Matthew McConaughey fan. If there's anybody, you know, who comes close to the John Hammometer, it's probably going to be my boy McConaughey. Especially his commercials.
Driving over in his Lincoln with his wild turkey.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I liked it. It kind of, I don't know how factually accurate, you know, any or all of it was, but I dug this part where he gets older. I dug him, you know, sending messages back to the past. Like, every step of the way, I was just on a little, like, breadcrumb trail. I was a mark, what they call it. Like, anything they did, I ate it up. So I was the ideal candidate to watch a movie like this, probably because I don't see a lot. So I wasn't able to predict anything. I was like, wow, yeah, this is amazing. So I really dug that movie.
And it's definitely one of those unique films. We actually reviewed that earlier on in the podcast's life, the earlier years.
It was like our within the first five, I think.
I want to say it probably was within our first five. And mind you, I think what Corey mentioned earlier really kind of epitomizes the whole mindset when it comes to any kind of medium or media. And that is, like, if it's not for you, it's not for you. And I think Interstellar is a really interesting sci-fi film. It's definitely got a unique approach to creating films. Not to mention, yes, it has Matthew McConaughey, and you can't go wrong with Matthew McConaughey. I think one of the great things about Interstellar for me personally was, like, the way the music just was so emotional, and having Hans Zimmer. Was Hans Zimmer, or was that the XL Junkies? Yeah.
No, I think it was just Hans.
It was Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. Was it?
It could have been both, because they collaborated on a few things.
Yeah.
I think that was Man of Steel was where they really collabed.
Gotcha. But, like, Hans Zimmer, like, pulled out all the feels in the soundtrack for that, and just feeling the whole vibe of that whole movie evokes so much, like, out of you as you're watching. Like, you cry just listening to the music.
Well, like, I still listen to the soundtrack today.
I'm not a fan of this genre, but it was so good, it made me try other movies in the genre.
Oh, wow.
Like, I watched The Martian, like, very shortly after, because I was like, oh, Interstellar was good, maybe I like this. And so I started watching and wasn't he in, like, another one, too? The Martian guy, I don't remember.
Damon?
Matt Damon. Didn't he do, like, two Alien movies in the same...
Wait. Well, he was in Interstellar.
Oh, that's what I like. I saw that. And I was like, was that the sequel? So I started watching the other one. That's why I watched it. Yeah, he was a dick in that movie.
Mark Watney?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like that movie, too. That, you know what was a runner-up for me, actually, in this, in terms of the sci-fi, was Ex Machina.
Ah, yeah. By
with Oscar
Villeneuve.
Isaac and...
wasn't it?
Domhnall Gleeson and... what's her name?
Alicia Vikander.
Yes. Yeah.
Who was the director of that one? Wasn't that...
Alex Garland. Alex Garland, yeah.
What about you, Eddie?
For me, I think it kind of boils down to, because of the fact that most of the ones I was thinking were said, but I have one for both. For the horror aspect, I really have to give it to It, 2017's It. Mm-hmm. I think there's been a lot of great horror in the last 10 years, between Get Out, It Follows, Train to Busan, but I really have to give it The Babadook back in 2014, but I really have to give it to It, because I think that's one of the few horror films that actually incorporates a really decent, like, coming-of-age story to the element of horror. And I know that was, like, one of the few things that Chad actually appreciated. If you could take that and just remove the clown part, it'd be a pretty...
And I don't even have a thing against clowns. I just don't like horror movies.
And then on the sci-fi perspective... Obviously, I had Arrival and Ex Machina as my one and two, so thanks a lot, Chad.
I got you back.
But I also had The Shape of Water. The Shape of Water.
That would count,
A Guillermo del Toro movie.
There we go, I knew it!
Got some of that love for Doug Jones, finally, as the fish man in this one. And it was just a beautiful fairy tale, kind of like what he did with Pan's Labyrinth. And
it was a beautiful fairy tale. That has more than just fairy tale. I mean, these people are horny.
I haven't eaten
in this movie.
I haven't
just
eaten
so you
sushi
know.
Since I watched that movie.
Yeah,
that was disgusting.
I thought it was aside from certain parts. I think the film is, like, overall, it's a unique story, and it's definitely one that I think could evolve into more and more parts that he creates, like this macabre universe that we know Guillermo to do. So.
Well, the one good thing that you can always count on Guillermo del Toro to do is to completely control the environment that you're in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's in like the super fantastical dark, you know, Pan's Labyrinth kind of stuff, or the very stylized, like almost historical fiction-esque type environment of The Shape of Water, like he completely controls what it looks like, sounds like, you know, like you have a complete experience with him at the helm.
Yeah, that was good world building. I'll give it that. It was really unique. It felt kind of like a video game Bioshock-ish with that dystopian like future. I liked it. I did think that was probably the best part of the movie.
But yeah, when it comes to I think I had more trouble because sci-fi was a little bit easier to cover. There was few of those in terms of really standout-ish. Like after The Shape of Water would have probably been like Blade Runner 2049. But I think horror was where I really got tripped up, and so I'm glad I was able to kind of dial it into like a few of those. But I think what's more difficult is the next genre that we're going to jump into, which happens to be drama thriller. And kind of kicking this one off, because I know drama thriller films really do have a hard time gauging them because certain people get different things out of them. It's not just like, oh, this is what I'm, you know, delivering to the people and everybody's going to get this. Like, people tend to get different things from different parts of the film. Chad and I, we absolutely abhorred Manchester by the Sea. There was nothing good about it.
No.
And it won an Oscar, didn't it?
Probably, but it was, I mean, just, I don't know. Like,
a lot of stuff wins Oscars.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. And that was, out of all the lists that I was seeing online, that was like at the top of most people's like best drama. I'm like, why? But I have to say, like, the best drama film that I've seen so far for this year has to be 2018's Blindspotting. And I know I'm probably taking Spencer's, but Blindspotting was an absolute, like, out of left field movie that we ended up watching super late in the middle of the night.
It definitely did not get the play that it deserved.
Oh, nope. No in theaters. Way. Like, it got so, like, under, just, it just got swept to the side. I think it got noted for like sound editing or something, like something ridiculous that's not really pertinent to the whole overall story and the message. But the film, from the writing to the acting to the whole storyline altogether, it was incredible. And the climactic ending, the whole film feels like a song. Mm-hmm. It feels like a song coming out of Oakland, and you get to that climactic part towards the end, and it just blows you away as to like how explosive it is. And you're left like, where do they go from here? And then they're still able to create like a sense of, you know, brevity at that tail end of the film to kind of ease the stormy seas, if you will. And it's just such a great and beautiful film about, honestly, the gentrification in Oakland and the craziness therein. So I absolutely love that film. I know I took it from Spence. I'm sorry, but
it's fine. It was in my personal favorite, so
that's okay. So you got another place to say it. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, Corey, what did you get as drama or thriller?
So I watched this one on accident because I don't go seek out dramas or thrillers.
You seem to do this a lot.
I don't like. I'm an anxious person.
It's like he's stumbling into rooms and sitting down and watching movies.
Kinda, at least he's seeing the best.
Yeah, so
that's true.
I don't go seek, like, when I have spare time. I don't think, oh, let's go watch a drama thriller. I want to see stuff go bang. One day, you know, me and Elizabeth were having date night. Me and my wife, and we were going through, I think. We were like, oh, we've seen everything on Netflix. We've seen everything on Hulu. We've seen everything everywhere. And it's like, oh, we still have Amazon. Let's see what's on Amazon Video. And then the first thing on the marquee was mid-90s. And I had heard that it was directed by Jonah Hill. I don't know if it was written by him, too, but I know it was like, you know, a big project of his. And I grew up in the 90s. I have a fondness for that decade. So I was like, okay, let's watch this. Completely.
Yeah, it was written by Jonah Hill.
Was it written by him too?
Yep.
Blew me away, man. You can tell he's one of us. You know, he's one of those 90 kids. It was, I remember my parents talking about, I can't even remember what movies from the 80s. It could have been like some goofy comedies like, you know,
go ahead.
Was that high school one?
Dazed and Confused.
Fast Times at
Fast Times, yeah. Mm-hmm. They, and Ferris Bueller, like when they watch those, they're like, yeah, that was our time, you know? I don't think necessarily the characters and stuff, but right. It's like, that's how we talked. That's how we judged. That was us, you know? And when I saw this movie, I got that. I was like, whoa, I've been with those cats, you know, when they're talking about. Then some of the stupid stuff that the kids would be telling each other, you know, like, and the way that they use certain words, and even though you couldn't use them now, but you're like, back then, that's just how we talked.
Yeah.
You know? And although I wasn't one of those kids, you know, those skater kids, we all knew that guy. He lived on our street and stuff. So it was just a really cool slice of life. To the core, like, in, I think what hooked me is in the first scene, they show the kid's bedroom, and he had the same sheets as I had. The same Ninja Turtle sheets.
I was going to say, were they the Power Rangers or the Ninja Turtle sheets?
They were the Ninja Turtle ones with, like, the different colors with the Ninja Turtle, and it looked like brick. Like, it was the exact same sheets. We probably all had them, but they were popular. I don't know, but that, I was like, whoa, those are my sheets. So, and it only, that was just the beginning. It just kept ringing me in. So I'm really glad I had an excuse to talk about this movie because it doesn't really fit too many categories. It's not a movie I go out and tell a bunch of people to go watch. But if you grew up from that time period and you could appreciate it, I think just it was written well. I think it was just really authentic, if I could say anything, to that time period.
Yeah.
And so there's not like a bad guy or, you know, he's got to, you know, get the skateboarding trick to make it to finals or regional. Like, it doesn't have any of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you just see a little bit of this kid's life. And you, if you could relate to it, you could relate to it. And I think, you know, a lot of people from my ilk in that time period really could. So I love that movie.
This is that film that came out of A24. And to be honest, like, I've seen, I remember that when this film was being publicized in the theaters, and I remember seeing like, That looks interesting. I don't know if I'm sold on it, but hearing Corey talk about it, I'll give it a try.
They filmed it like that time period too. So like some of the shots that they would choose and the camera setups, it felt like I was watching a show about that time period filmed like it was from that time period. Okay. In a lot of it. So like overall, it's just a true, like, really good embodiment from, you know, again, another comedian, Jonah Hill, who probably, you know, saw a lot of dark stuff because there's some dark stuff. But I mean, you know, not all our parents were great. And he did a really great job capturing, you know, how that affects you and, you know, the friends you pick up from it and how one good influence in your life could change your trajectory. So it's got a really good message through it and everything. And it's nothing like anything I typically watch. So I really enjoyed that one.
Quick note. It's interesting. I'm reading up the information on this film. It says, a quick piece of information, after a test screening, the projectionist said to the filmmakers that it was so cool that they found a movie from the 90s that they were releasing. So,
yeah, they killed it in that category.
Well, what about you, Spence? You got a non-mid-90s drama film or thriller that you want to throw in there from this decade?
Yeah, I've got two. My two are The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And The Grand Budapest Hotel.
What is that, Paul Anderson or Paul...
Oh, wasn't it Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson, sorry.
Yeah.
They're Paul Thomason's the other one.
Like, really stylish movies with, like, great cinematography.
Yeah.
Last Black Man is, you know, just about, like, this guy who's after his old family house. We talked about it on a previous episode. It's a really amazing movie. And then The Grand Budapest Hotel is one I just saw with some friends a few years back where, you know, it's about this kid who works in a hotel as a bellhop and goes on an adventure with the concierge because he's been accused of a murder. And it was really good film. It was kind of surprising.
Yeah, we talked about that in Lesson 169, The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And we actually went to the local indie theater to watch it.
Yeah.
And it was actually, I had never heard anything about it. Spencer's like, oh, we're going to go see this. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I'm like, am I allowed to see this? Or just like, and so we end up at the theater. And like, the music is so unique. And like, I think the best way to express how I felt this film made me feel was like warm, like just the color tone to the sound, to the music, to like the whole, the whole message that I was trying to get across, it was just like, man, this is a pretty powerful film. So good choice.
Yeah.
What was your other choice?
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I have yet to see. That is the only Wes Anderson film so far that I haven't seen, because I just saw Moonrise Kingdom the other day, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, this is fun, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it too. So,
but Grand Budapest Hotel, I hear, is like really great. Like, yeah, visually, yeah. It's bright, it's vibrant, it's really cool to see itself by itself.
Yeah, so come over to my house and we'll watch it.
Sounds like a plan. What about you, Chad?
Okay, so this for me was the most difficult category to nail down, because to
really?
Me, drama and thriller are different things. And so it's a genre that I really gravitate toward. So, like, outside of action, which has all the superheroes, right?
Yeah.
Drama and thriller is like my total jam. So just to give you a little like taste of how much I appreciate my top pick, I'm going to read a couple of other picks.
By all means.
Starting in 2010, Inception.
Okay.
And True Grit, the remake.
Oh, that's
also with Matt Damon in it.
Yeah, there we go.
Jeff
Bridges.
And
the dude.
Love them both, right? The dude.
What?
What, Rooster Cogburn in that movie, I think is the character's name.
Jeff Bridges.
I've rarely seen a more interesting character on screen. The way that he talks, all of his mannerisms, like, it's so good in that movie, True Grit. So I passed those up.
Uh-huh.
I also passed up a couple of more recent favorites, Logan in 2017 and Bad Times at the El Royale in 2018.
Oh, that's right.
So good. What I landed on, and again, apparently I like to cry. I don't know what it is. What I landed on was 2012's The Impossible, which is Ewan McGregor,
this movie.
Naomi Watts, the debut, as far as I know, of Tom Holland. He's like 12 in this movie, and he kills it. So good. It's about the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
They're a British family, I think it is. They're a family vacationing in, I believe, Thailand, but it might be a different area in like the Pacific Ocean. I think it's Thailand, but the tsunami hits, the family gets separated. Two of the kids are with dad, one of the kids is with mom. It's super dramatic because it's actually based on a real life family's story. It is a huge tearjerker, so worth like living through and enduring, because it is, it's like an endurance kind of movie. Like, you have to like hold your breath sometimes. You wince, you cry, you're like, can you just reunite them, please? And no joke, when I heard that Tom Holland was cast as Spider-Man for the MCU, I did a little cheer because of the work that he did in The Impossible. I was like, you are not picking somebody who can just do like a one-note action film. Like, from the time he was young, he could like do real acting.
Yeah.
So anyway, my hats were off to the like Kevin Feige and all, and Sony and all of them, for casting Tom Holland. I know he campaigned really hardcore for that movie too. He like did all sorts of gymnastics on camera to even be auditioned for Spider-Man. But really, The Impossible, like, you've got to, it's kind of like, you know, like The Passion of the Christ or something else that's like really heavy, really weighty.
Yeah, yeah.
And based on a real life event, you really have to like be in the right mindset, or like a Hotel Rwanda. You've got to be in the right mindset to watch it, but do yourself a favor and watch it. It's one of the most like cathartic experiences, and it doesn't have a sad ending. It's got a lot of sadness all throughout the whole thing, but it doesn't have a sad ending.
The thing about this movie is, Chad has been telling me about this movie for about 5 years now. He's been telling me about how great it is, and no joke, and this is me being full, you know, fully transparent, I've been afraid to watch it because of how emotionally engaged I tend to get with movies. And I feel like this is one of those ones that I'm going to be like, I'm going to literally be watching it and I'm going to like just start bawling, because it seems like it's going to get you in that way. Especially,
and it will.
Especially when you have these movies that are based on like true life events. I think that makes it even more of that like emotional engagement for most moviegoers, because you realize, oh my gosh, like someone actually experienced this and somebody came out to tell the story. Now, whoever that may be, that's left to the
unknown. And here's one of the things that's really special, and it's not the only movie to do this, but you could tell this story because real life event, massive tsunami, hundreds of thousands of people died, I believe, not just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. So, like, you could put absolutely crap actors into a movie like that, and it would still affect you, but they put really, really good actors in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just, it's tenfold because the performances are so compelling. Yeah. I would give that movie every award that I could give it. It's that good.
Damn. I wonder if it did get any awards.
And you will cry more than once.
See, and that's what I'm worried about. Dang it. All right. So moving forward, jumping into something a little bit lighter, let's talk about cartoons, or better yet, just animation, the best animation of the decade. Now, let's just be honest. Everybody at this table, we're all still kids at heart. We still, I mean, everybody here has Disney Plus, so I'm sure everybody's had their share of X-Men TV series or, you know, Bonkers or whatever you were, you know, binging on as a kid.
That's you a were the only, right there. You were the only kid watching Bonkers.
I was watching.
I can assure you.
Oh, trust me. I love Bonkers. So
that's not surprising, actually.
Hey, don't hate.
It makes a lot of sense, yeah. Actually.
Whatever. Anyway, so jumping into this, because it's such a vast category, like when it comes to animation, I honestly probably have to go with another Wes Anderson. I'll kick this off with another Wes Anderson, actually, film with Isle of Dogs. Hmm. Isle of Dogs is a great stop-motion animation film that was done, beautifully done, about this island of these dogs that are just dumped there. And some are voiced by Edward Norton. One's voiced by Edward Norton. One by Bryan Cranston. One by Jeff Goldblum. And they're dogs. And they're trying to help this kid who ended up, like, crashing his, like, little plane thing onto their island. And they're helping him try to get back to the mainland. And it's just a cute, loving film that you end up falling in love with, because Bryan Cranston plays, like, the grumpy dog that doesn't want to be near anybody. And, of course, it makes sense because it's Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's such a fun film, and I actually really, I had to buy it. I ended up buying it, and I own it, and I watch it, like, as often as I can because it's really fun. So I don't know if any of you guys have seen that movie.
Oh, I wanted to.
No. And it just proves negative. How your taste never improved in animated series.
It's
you went
true.
From Bonkers the Cat to Isle for Dogs.
Isle of Dogs. Get it right.
Whatever, man.
But it is such a great film, and I would actually recommend it to anybody who's looking for just a great stop motion in this current day and age, because stop motion, aside from like Wallace and Gromit or Shaun the Sheep, you're not really going to get much out of that. But Laika Studios is doing so many great things.
Yeah, they're super good.
And this is just another example of some of their work that they're pushing out to show people this is not a dead art form. So what about you, Spence?
For animation, I put Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Ooh.
Because that, just on animation quality alone, was amazing.
Yeah,
it really was.
It was just such a great-looking movie, and I'm so excited for the next one.
Like, just to be honest, nobody expected Sony to do something this great.
No.
Like, after the Emoji movie, like, everybody was like, yeah, we can go ahead and kick Sony to the curb. They're not doing anything in the animation department. And then they come out with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. The entire, like, palette color of this entire film is just incredible. And then the different art styles that are all incorporated into it, It's unheard of. I don't think any other film has ever done, any other animated film, or live action, to be honest, has ever done anything like that.
Now, I don't have the soundtrack to this one on vinyl, but I would love it.
Oh,
because
no
it is
doubt.
Another one that had an incredible soundtrack that kind of carried a lot of weight, you know, in the movie. I think I'm just going to jump in on this one, too, because it was my favorite. And I have nothing else to contribute to the animated one. But before, it was always like Marvel makes the movies, DC makes the cartoons. That's just the way it goes.
Totally.
They both can't do each other's art form. Then Marvel, Sony, whoever was like, all right, Star Wars, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And, you know, I remember the first time I watched Lion King. That was the first time as a kid I watched a cartoon and I was like, whoa, like blown away by the storytelling, the twists, the turns, the art, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I wasn't a Disney kid, but Lion King was significant for me.
Yeah.
And when I saw this one, I left the theater as an adult with the same feeling I had as a kid when I saw Lion King. I was like, wow, this is a transformative type of movie that I'm so glad exists. I really hope they play it true to the next one. I think it proved that what you can do in cartoons is so much better than what you can do with live action, because you don't got to deal with the actors.
Yeah.
Like, they were able just to, like, can you imagine a movie now where they would have just thrown the Kingpin and the Crocodile or whatever as just like little sub characters for like half a scene?
Yeah.
Like, they would have had to cast it, and then everyone would have bitched, be like, oh, that was a bad Kingpin, you know? But because it was a cartoon, like, they were able just to throw, they could throw Venom in there, they could throw whatever they want, but it's a cartoon, so it doesn't matter. Like, you know, they could just draw it, and it's cool, and everyone accepted it for what it was. I felt like that was one of the times where, like, we were all kind of united. Everything comes out, and then there's people who love it, and then you got to see the other coin of people, oh, man, they hate it. It's SJW. It's got this, that, and the other thing. You know, there's just too much, like, conflict over these movies. And when this one came out, everyone was like, all right, that's badass.
Yeah.
We can all get behind this one, no matter where you are in life, what you think is cool or not. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse brought people together.
I think without a doubt. I think this was one of those films that really shook up what people viewed as the animated aspect, like Corey was saying, of Marvel. And you know what? They've already announced the sequel coming out, and here's hoping that they can, you know, catch lightning in a bottle twice and make sure that the second one seriously hits the same level, if not, you know, exceeds it for what's to come.
Every single scene in that movie can be a wallpaper that you're like totally super stoked about.
Yeah.
Like, everything is artsy and beautiful. I loved it.
What about you, Chad?
I also had Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse as my number one, and I won't wax philosophic about it more than has been done. I will say, though, my runner-up was Zootopia. And the reason for that is because, similar to how I feel like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse really transcended its own genre, just on the scale of the art alone, I think Zootopia, in terms of, I had no idea what the movie was really about. We went and saw it, and it was like, oh, like anthropomorphic animals. Like, they dress up and go to jobs at the city and whatever, and the sloth's really funny, and his name is Flash or whatever. But it really showed how, with a quote-unquote cartoon movie, you can tell a really, like, mature, elevated story that's about a lot more than just cute animals acting like people. And at the same time, like, thinking about, like, it's still made for kids. So this is something that you are trusting your audience of, primarily young people who haven't, like, gone to high school, college, whatever, haven't had jobs, haven't been, like, exposed to and or programmed with a lot of, like, social norms and whatever. And in no uncertain terms, just, like, lay it out there with animals. Like, this kind of behavior toward one another isn't cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, for real.
And it was so well done. I don't know if they have plans of doing a sequel. I kind of wouldn't want them to, because I don't know that anything else could be as good. Whereas Spider-Verse, I can't wait for another one, just on the sake of the visuals alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it elevated what animated film can do.
Yeah.
But for Zootopia, it was really more of a story play, and I don't know that you could capture that kind of lightning in a bottle twice.
Shout outs to Inside Out.
True.
That one was one that I cannot wait to show my daughter, because there's something to be said for, like, childhood imagination and how to deal with feelings you don't understand. Mm-hmm. That movie kind of, like, encapsulated and captured with a little, like, I bawled my freaking eyes out when that stupid pink elephant.
Oh my gosh, Bing Bong.
Bing Bong, when he disappeared. Because I was like, man, I had a Bing Bong. You know, we all had that.
That's true.
We all had a Bing Bong that goes away. And then just how they, usually I hate in those movies, especially, like, I remember early Toy Stories, like, you know, the neighborhood kid, like, they just didn't have people down. Mm-hmm. So when you had people, it, like, took me out of it. Like, go back to toys and animals and stuff.
Yeah.
But the little girl in that movie, you feel for her so much. Like, her cost, like, her whole demeanor changes from this kid to this jaded, you know, mid teenager because of their move or whatever.
Yeah.
That one made me feel the most. Mm. And Thanks, Chad, for stirring that up in me when you were talking about Zootopia. Because
got it.
Sometimes you need these kid movies to be breaking down the real, like the more raw feelings that you just can't capture otherwise.
Totally. Like I said, I like to cry, apparently.
I was going to say.
I'm right there with you, man. I love crying.
I feel like every time something goes wrong with Corey's kid, he's like, here, put this on. Watch this.
I'll have a movie for everything. You need to know how to run a drug empire? Here's Goodfellas.
There you go. Just don't get caught. Like,
don't
in the
get
end.
High off your own supply, man.
And just a little bit of note, we actually reviewed Zootopia in lesson 7. So going back to the single digits. And it's true, like a lot of these films, because of the fact that I think the studios that are out there are starting to get wiser in that kids are not the only people who are watching these animated films. And people are coming in, adults are coming in feeling nostalgic and watching them, hoping to kind of get a glimpse or a feel of what they used to feel. And they hit it on the head with Spider-Man, and they hit it on the head with In-N-Out, as well as like In-N-Out, Inside Out, In-N-Out's the burger place.
So, I'm hungry, man. Stop.
But like you have all these films that are known because of the fact that they evoke such emotion from within you of not just feeling, but like childhood feelings, and really digging down into like losing something as ridiculous as a Bing Bong. You know, like everybody had their own Bing Bong when they were growing up. And, you know, once that thing is gone, you're like, oh, my gosh, I used to have a teddy. Like you have those feelings while you're watching it. So I think that's one of the great things about animation nowadays is that it's evolving to recognize that its demographic is a lot larger than it used to be.
Well, and kind of going back to something that Corey said a lot earlier, like if you feel like a movie's made for you, like it doesn't matter if it's a cartoon, a musical, horror movie, whatever. Like if it speaks to you, it speaks to you. You know, that's one of the great purposes behind any kind of art form. Even something that's more like a mass entertainment kind of art.
Oh, completely.
You know, I mean, that's hopefully why most of the creators put all that time, money, and energy into making it in the first place.
Oh, completely. I agree. Jumping forward into one of our final categories, obviously we can't steer too far away from film unless we're going to be talking about the best comedy / feel good film of the year or of the decade. Nobody kill me.
Yeah.
Of the decade.
We all know what you said first and what you said second.
And in talking about comedy / feel good, mind you, there's comedy's just in a really weird funk. And in terms of like this last decade, like there weren't really that many really well done comedy films. So I kind of had to mush that with feel good. And I kind of want to throw it over to Corey because I want to get his perspective first on this, on that particular.
It was tough. It was hard to come up with. I think I would steer towards like. Just to preface this, I'm not like a comedy guru. I just like things that make me laugh, and not too much made me laugh this year. Like for reference, I think if we were to do this for the decade previously, Joe Dirt probably would have been my comedy special. Before that, probably would have been like Tommy Boy.
Why is that the second reference to Joe Dirt I've heard today?
Because Joe Dirt transcends time. Like it's so great.
David Spade really needs his money, so he's putting it out there.
No, for real, I was watching another movie. Oh, no, I was watching, this isn't considered spoilers, but, you know, it's known that The Witcher, his background is that, you know, his mom, like, abandons him somewhere, and they showed that in the new show. I was like, oh, he got Joe Dirted. Like, that's just what happens. His mom left him at the Grand Canyon. he told him he'd be right back.
Now it's a verb.
Yeah.
There you go. You got Joe Dirted.
The Witcher was Joe Dirt. The Witcher is Joe Dirt, like in old times. But so it was hard to come up with. I'd say there's tons of comedy specials I would rank way high above these movies. And I tried to prep to see, like, what even were good comedies. And, you know, a lot of lists had, like, old ones like MacGruber and stuff, which
MacGruber.
I mean, come on, that was pretty half-assed. I think
better as a sketch than a movie.
Much better. So I was torn between two. One because I don't know. I met the guy, and I think Ironically, you know, The Room is probably the best comedy ever. So of the last 10 years, the fact that The Disaster Artist came out and did such a good job documenting that and how Franco became Tommy Wiseau. I've watched that movie. It's probably the only comedy I watched more than three times.
The Room?
I'm talking about Disaster Artist.
Oh.
From the last 10 years, I can't think of a comedy movie that I watched over and over again. And so Disaster Artist was the one I watched multiple times and still found it funny. The other one, it was like a one-hitter. I watched it once, but I really appreciated its just writing and its angle and view of comedy. And that was What We Do in the Shadows. What's his name?
Taika Waititi.
Yeah, him. It had Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords, which was like my in, which is like, I guess I should watch this. And it had very much that kind of offbeat, kind of awkward, very well thought out comedy style of like these vampires that are just like trying to live, you know, in a very kind of just nonchalant kind of comedic way. So from where it was coming from, how it was written, and just the comedy tricks that they applied to make it funny, like just really spot on acting and with just the right hints of, like, you could obviously tell improvisationalized scenes. I definitely think What We Do in the Shadows is like a sleeper hit for good comedy for the last 10 years.
Now, just for reference, we actually reviewed both The Room and The Disaster Artist in a double feature episode on Lesson 93. So that was a fun episode because we actually saw The Room right before we went to the movie theaters to go see The Disaster Artist. So it helped with like having the frame of reference for like certain scenes and certain situations that were happening to note, oh, okay, maybe that's what was going on behind the scenes with this and this and that. But The Disaster Artist was such like an interesting and like surprise of a film because, let's be honest, not many people took not many people take Tommy Wiseau seriously.
Well, some comedies...
Nor should you.
Yeah. But some comedies are written with jokes, you know? Like, if you listen to... or you go back and watch Austin Powers or something, those are punchlines where you're designed to laugh.
Yeah.
In Disaster Artist, it's truth in comedy from beginning to end. It is not jokes. You know, there may be a couple punchlines or reoccurring bits in there, but for the most part, you're laughing at the situations... And that this guy, who was a real person and really did these things, did stuff in this sequence. Like, it feels like you were there, and that's what's funny about it. Because, like, the guys are asking him, are we shooting this in, you know, this or that? He's like, oh, we'll do both. He doesn't know. And they're like, what? Oh, he's paying. All right.
There you go.
That had to be real. Like, there's no way they did that on accident. So... That's what I think I appreciated it the most is like, wow, shit, this really happened.
I had a selection for both comedy and for feel good. And for comedy, I had this year's actually a film from this year, Jojo Rabbit, which is a very interesting movie. Both actually directed by the same guy who directed What We Do in the Shadows, which is Taika Waititi. And it was a very interesting film, very satirical, about a little boy who is growing up during the tail end of Nazi Germany's, you know, the Third Reich's reign. And he's growing up, wants to be a Nazi as he gets older. But then he finds out that his mom is hiding a Jewish girl within the walls of their home. And so it just from that premise alone, it doesn't sound like it. But there's a lot of hilarity that ensues in terms of this guy's, like, this little kid's understanding of the ridiculousness of, you know, the Nazi rule and what they believe. Not to mention, you have great supporting members of the cast, such as like Sam Rockwell and Scarlett Johansson. I forgot her name. Corey, what's the guy's name that plays Euron Greyjoy?
I don't know names, man.
Well, the guy that's in that one plays like the second in command to Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
And it's hilarious. They play like this closeted gay couple slash working on the same. It's a really ridiculous.
As Nazis?
As yep. Nazis. And they're trying to like keep it under wraps, but like it's interesting. And the whole film is just, it's insightful, but it's funny. And my second choice for the feel good, honestly has to go to Paddington 2 from 2017. And I know that sounds like it's a kid's movie, but we've already prefaced, if it works for you, that doesn't matter. Yeah.
We've already prefaced, we're all giant children.
Exactly. And Paddington 2, like, I didn't see Paddington 1, but I heard that the first Paddington movie was bad. So I'm like, all right, whatever. And so my niece was one who was like, oh, you should check out this movie. It's really interesting. I actually like it. And I'm like, you're a teenager and you're talking about Paddington 2? She's like, yeah, it's good. So I watch it and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am chuckling and laughing at a bear who eats orange marmalade and is in prison. And it's like, and the fact that that's this actual situation that happens in this film is hilarious. So I absolutely love the film. I thought it was great. It's such a good feel-good movie. And yeah, I think the only thing I would change in that film was Hugh Grant played the villain, and Hugh Grant didn't really do well as the villain in that particular
film.
He's
just so likable.
He is just that British charm.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Spence? What did you get for comedy feel good?
All right, this one was hard for me. Oh. But I put down Scott Pilgrim versus the World. That is one. I'm noticing a lot of the movies I picked are highly stylized. But yeah, this one, super stylish, had a great soundtrack. I still listen to like the boss battle theme between Scott and Gideon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a really great movie with Michael Cera in it, whose face was just born to play Scott Pilgrim.
You mean young? Juvenile?
Yeah, like he fits in perfectly. So it had a really great cast and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, from what is it, 2010,
mm-hmm.
You had the likes of Kieran Culkin, Anna Kendrick, Aubrey Plaza, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Jason Schwartzman. You had, what's his name, Brandon Roth. He's got a role in this film.
Oh, yeah, and then Chris Evans
is in it. Brie Larson's in it. Man, I got to rewatch this movie.
Heck, people were in this
Bill
movie.
Bill Hader's in this movie.
Was he?
He's a voice.
Wow.
Wow, I got to rewatch this movie. But it looks like there's a lot of really great cast members in this movie. Looks like I got to get myself back into the film.
Bill Hader, fun trivia fact, Bill Hader was also in Corey's new favorite Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's a lead role. Nice. We didn't get the personal favorites quite yet, but spoiler, it's going to be Noel.
I have a
Disney Plus special.
What about you, Chad?
All right. My vote for this one is it leans more on the feel-good side than the comedy because it's funny, but it's not a comedy movie. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. from 2015.
That Guy was Ritchie. A great one.
It's got Henry Cavill. Again, Alicia Vikander.
Armie Hammer,
right. Mm-hmm. And it's like Cold War, like spy versus spy, but they have to work together. It's really like stylish. And I loved the soundtrack for it. That's another thread like that we've heard again and again on this episode. Mm-hmm. Like things that help a movie really register in your mind and stand out. Soundtrack.
They matter.
Yeah.
It's completely.
So yeah, I love it. I will turn that movie on just to have on in the background sometimes because it's effortless. It's fun. I wish they had made another one of it.
Very true.
If they ever wanted to try to put the funding together, I'll give you $5 and I will pray hard that you get the rest of your money because I will go and watch it.
Exactly. And the great thing about this film, the way it ends too.
Hugh Grant's in it also. Speaking of Hugh Grant. Lovable British, you know, whatever.
And it does end on a feel-good note, so that's one of the great things about this film. Like
totally, and it totally sets up a sequel.
Exactly.
And even like the one thing that I love almost the most about the whole thing is that the end credits continue the story. Like it wasn't like a mid-credits tease or an end-credits tease. It's almost like an infographic style, like redacted documents and whatever, but it kind of shows you from where they end with the actors, where they end the story and the credits start going and the graphics in the credits tell you what the characters did next. Like it literally continues with the mission that they get at the end. It shows you pieces of what they were involved in and totally leaves you wanting another installment. And it didn't do well enough in the box office to earn it, unfortunately, but
not the right people saw it.
I would go see a sequel. If they ever made one.
I own it. I watch it just as frequently. I have to because it's one of those movies that we actually saw together.
Totally,
and
yeah.
At the end of it, we were like, this is a good movie.
It's
like,
so good.
After Armie Hammer's incident with the Lone Ranger, I mean, we had to come up with something great.
Yeah, well.
Oh, that was such a bad movie.
Oh, Disney.
And then you said you had a second choice?
Oh, no. That was... That was my top choice.
Oh, that was your top choice. All right.
No, I was saying I don't. It's not a comedy per se. It's gotcha. More for me. It's more of a feel good movie.
Gotcha. And it really is like the way the film progresses. It's not like a cheesy spy versus spy film. Like I don't know if you remember that movie with Eddie Murphy and Owen Wilson.
Oh yeah, what is that?
Bowfinger?
No, not that one. But they play like one's a boxer and one's a spy. It's like one of the few Eddie Murphy films he actually did wasn't.
Hey, Eddie Murphy's having a resurgence, and I think he's the thing I'm looking forward to most in the next decade, because he's back, baby. Like this, his last movie, I didn't have a chance. It didn't really rank high enough because I'm only a third of the way through on his My Name Is Dolomite movie. But that was a really good movie, and he hosted SNL for their Christmas special, and it was the best Saturday Night Live I've seen in the last 10 years.
It was good.
It was so good, top to bottom. Like, Eddie Murphy, and he has a stand-up special coming back on Netflix.
That's right.
And Raw and Delirious were two of my favorites of all time, so watch out for Eddie Murphy, this up-and-comer.
Well, like a lot of the early 2000s spy films, they were a little bit cheesier, and this one seemed more polished, more along the mindset of like, all right, they're going to actually take spy and espionage work seriously while still having fun. And I think that helped with the whole feel-good vibe.
Well, and you had like the, I don't know, like the sexual tension, and it was just, it was the whole package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More people should have gone to see it.
Completely. We should turn back time so everybody can. And then I want to kind of round out this conversation with our own personal favorites. Like with the last 10 years, like I said, movies have been all over the place, but there has to have been like one or two films that really stuck inside your guys' hearts as like the standout, most unique, most personal films that you guys had ever experienced. And I already know Corey's already divulged his, so let's start with Corey to see where that's at.
Yeah, so I put a lot of thought into this, and I'm super happy to say that my favorite movie of the last decade is 100% Sex and the City 2.
I knew it.
No, but for real, Batman versus Superman.
Now you're really trolling
yeah,
us.
Yeah, no, that's even worse. I was going to say. No, the actual one has to be, and I'll fight you if you say this is incorrect, it's got to be The Avengers Endgame. I know it was brought up a little bit earlier before, which it should have won pretty much every category. I think the only
Agreed.
Reason, I think the last 10 years, I'm not a movie buff. So just from my outsider perspective, I wasn't like blown away. It had some highlights, but I feel like if you go back to previous decades, you could just list off hit after hit of like the best movies
it's
of
true.
Cinematic history. And this time it's like, Interstellar, you know, like a lot of the movies we brought up today probably wouldn't hold a candle in the grand scheme of movies over time. But if one thing dominated this decade, it was the Marvel movies. Like, they made more money than anything. They told really, really good stories, you know, through... How long did that actually go? 15, 20? How many years was...
You're talking about the...
It was 10 years, right?
Yeah, 10 years.
10 years of...
12 years.
It was 12 years. It's been 12 years.
2008 was Iron Man, yeah, which is when this whole thing started. So most of this happened in the last 10 years, and it was must-see cinema. Like, everybody had to get out. And even though Star Wars kind of came back, it left people disappointed. It left people polarized. And I feel like the Marvel movies had something for everybody. And the amalgamation was the Endgame. And they did everybody's favorite hero justice. My favorite, obviously, was Star-Lord. He threw super hard, like, in the movie. You know, he caused, like, the whole second movie, basically, in one of his errors. But still, like, they just wrote everybody well. They all interacted. It had this huge, oh, my God, moments. And the ending sequences, everything just kind of put a nice bow on the entire decade. So, as far as I'm concerned, the last 10 years was the year of comic book movies. And that was the pinnacle. That was the one that we were all building to. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 10 years? But that is the 2010s to me, is the Marvel beast.
Agreed. Yeah.
What about you, Chad?
Well, I'm also pulling from the MCU on this one. Truth be told, my favorite movie in the entire sequence is Winter Soldier. But I've already mentioned that before for action movie. And Endgame just caps it off so nicely, but I can't go an entire episode of Best without mentioning Thor Ragnarok. That movie redefined a character. introduced Jeff Goldblum as Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And just, I mean, it really like, it was like, it was not at all what Ragnarok should be based on what like actual Norse mythology has or what it's ever been in the comics. But at the same time, it was the most refreshing dose of like, dude, these characters can keep going forever.
Yeah.
Like Thor, aside from like Chris Hemsworth charisma and biceps, Thor is like legit typically one of the lamest. And especially with the MCU set, like you've got, I don't know, you got Tony Stark's snarkiness, you've got Captain America's like perfection or whatever. And Thor is kind of like the goofy, weird talker who knows history. And like he's powerful and he has his like love-hate relationship with Hulk. But like even there, like they redefined like it, they had an interstellar buddy comedy.
Yeah.
Valkyrie had a huge introduction in that movie.
Yeah.
There's not a note in that movie that I don't like. Like the worst thing that I could even point out is probably the Thor like long hair wig, and that's gone in the first 20 minutes. So
yeah,
it's cool. Like I had no real problem with that movie. And again, Jeff Goldblum as Jeff Goldblum. Hello.
It's not even as
no. Heck yeah. No. He's and playing himself.
Who directed that one? It's that same guy Taika you've been talking about this Taika whole thing. Man, this guy he has awards, right? Can
Let's
you guys
hope.
He can better you guys give him a Film Lossifer award if he doesn't have
absolutely.
I mean, of course, he deserves all
total
the Film Lossifer awards.
I didn't even realize till today he was part of all those projects I like. That's pretty cool.
What about you, Spence?
Okay, so for my personal favorites, we already talked about Blindspotting, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next one is Black Panther.
Yes, I'm glad you said that. That was
Wakanda
on my list.
Wakanda forever. I mean, there's just so much going on in that movie because,
it's
like,
true.
There's so much, like, you know, intricate, like, let's research, like, you know, actual African culture and incorporate, you know,
yeah.
that design style into, like, the clothes and the buildings. And then, like, they did so much research on to make, like, Wakanda a real place that it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So.
And honestly, I wish Wakanda was a real place.
Seriously.
They, and I think out of all the Marvel movies we've seen, that had the most interesting villain
we've seen in forever
with Killmonger and how they made him. Like, they did the thing that a lot of people try and fail at, which is making your villain like, oh, yeah, I can see his side of the coin.
Yeah.
I think in Marvel history, like, Magneto is probably the epitome of that character, and they've screwed him over at Fox. And then they took Killmonger, of all things, like, who's just kind of like a B-rate villain in the comics. Like, no one talks about, oh, I want to see that new Killmonger. When's he coming back?
Right.
And they brought that guy in with beautifully acted by Creed. I don't know people's real names.
Michael B. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan crushed that stuff, man.
Yeah.
It was so good as a villain. And took it back to Oaktown right here. So we had our local roots.
Mm-hmm.
So everything about that movie and its villain was super sick. And a lot of people were upset because, I said Endgame kind of did everybody justice.
Mm.
They didn't really do Black Panther too much justice. Like, he had a couple cameos basically.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that's because in whatever this next phase is, he's gonna be the Tony Stark, or he'll be like he'll be a centerpiece of what's to come while the rest of these guys are on their way out.
And wasn't Wakanda the first to show out when the portal started opening?
They
get the first entrance, which means all eyes are on Wakanda for the future.
That was a huge pop in the audience too.
It really was.
When that happened, like, everybody, so that was so good.
I think I've never been more disappointed by a villain death where I'm like, I want more of this guy.
Yeah.
But, like, also he's so much of a threat to live a life.
That's a beautiful thing about comics, man. They will find a way.
Oh, he'll be back.
If they can find a way to bring him back, he'll be back.
They have to. Like, there's got to be something that happens in the next phase of the Marvel films where they're like, oh, they actually buried him in the Undying Lands and he arose and he's now back to, like, so, I don't know. I'm not
too
sure.
He'll come back a Force ghost and, like, just say some real effed up stuff, you know, just to get in your heads again. Like, remember me?
But I do have to appreciate what Corey was mentioning about Ryan Coogler being the director of this film, director and writer, and being here locally in Oakland, as well as studying for film here in the Sacramento area, here at Sac State. He actually attended Sacramento State University.
Stuff you only learn from the film Lost.
And the great thing about Black Panther is, like, this film completely broke the mold on, like, what you would expect out of superheroes that weren't trying to be, like, more so than what they are. Like, you could tell, like, the actors that were playing, they loved their character. Michael B. Jordan was fantastic as Killmonger. And T'Challa and the whole, everything seemed authentic. There was never a sense of it seemed like, oh, this is more than what it is. Like, there was a sense of, like, truth grounded in a lot of the culture that they were portraying, a lot of the traditions, a lot of the mindsets, a lot of the fears. I mean, and that goes back to where they were talking about in Wakanda and also in Oakland, because part of the film, like a couple of portions of the scenes are in Oakland, and the emotions that are there and the feelings and the whole, like, drive behind the villain's purpose, like, it's all rooted in truth. Like, there's a sense of earnestness there and honesty, and you can't help but be like, man, like, this guy, like Corey was saying, you can see both sides of that coin so easily, mm-hmm. and you're like, maybe I want the villain to win. I don't know. Like, because you want to find that justification for the villain, but in that same mindset, you're like, well, not like this. So you don't know who to root for. It was such a beautiful film.
And you will never root against T'Challa.
Never.
It's not going to happen. And the other thing that I think that, from an overall architecture point of view, one of the most brilliant things that the MCU hierarchy did decision-wise was to introduce T'Challa / Black Panther in Civil War so that you've already got buy-in and you can tell a completely him story in his own movie. Like, he lost his father in Captain America Civil War, and you saw the beginnings of what it did to him. You have, like, moments where, like, they're all arrested, right? And he's like, do you think these chains are going to hold me? Like, he just, like, he was such a baller already as just, like, a taste of the character.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, all the like, you know, your stereotypical, like, oh, it's always an orphan of some sort or whatever that does amazing things in most stories, because it's such a compelling, like reality to think about, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who lost somebody close to them, be it a mentor, an actual parent, a sibling, whatever, and then what do they do with that? Because even in Civil War, he could go the revenge route, which is where he starts, and he makes a different choice. So by the time you get to his own movie, you're already sold on the character.
Completely.
Which honestly, that makes room for a better villain in Killmonger, because you don't have to, like, you don't have to convince the audience that T'Challa is a guy worth rooting for. You know that before the film starts, because you've already seen him.
Yeah.
Like, dude, let's root for this guy.
Yeah.
He does the right thing.
True.
And he knows who he is. So, yeah, and that really does pave the way for an incredible counterpoint, which you get in Killmonger.
Completely. Rounding out my personal favorite, and since we're completely on this Marvel train, and not that that's a bad thing, it's just that's just the way we roll. I'm going to round this out with one of my personal favorites of the last decade, and that is 2017's Logan. I absolutely adored this film. It was a unique take on a character that I had read. I had actually first fallen in love with back at the beginning when I first started reading comics. Wolverine was always a great superhero to me. He was somebody who had this energy and anger and this tenacity and this ability just to show up and be a crazy beast in wherever he was at. And he was just this killing machine, yet still had complexity to him as you read on through the comics. And to find him in this film and giving him not only the character, but Hugh Jackman's role and responsibility as the performer, as the character itself, giving it the beautiful send-off that it did to not only everything that came before it within that universe, but to his ability to play this character still, being able to say goodbye to a character, in other words, this was a great way to just really find, you know, this place for this character and to see, like, the hope for what's to come. James Mangold, I believe, was the one who directed it, and honestly, I wasn't that big of a fan of, what was it, the Wolverine?
Oh, yeah.
Which is the one that came before him, before this one, but I absolutely love this film. It was so beautiful. It was more driven in the mindset of, like, what if these characters had a deeper and more rooted issue in their life, and what if they grew old and faced these issues? And it was something that I just really appreciated about the story.
I think Old Man Logan is probably one of the best, you know, comic series that happened to Wolverine in the recent history. So the fact that he's been playing this damn character for longer than a decade, like,
yeah,
in these early X-Men movies, and he was getting older, so it was always on comic book fans' like minds, like, okay, he's getting older, he'd be the perfect Old Man Logan. And it was very, very far off from the Old Man Logan storyline, but in spirit he was totally there. He was crotchety. I liked, you know, they brought in Professor X, and he, you know, he had his role in it. And I mean, a lot of people weren't super stoked about this movie, which is why I appreciate you had it on your list, because I actually liked it a lot. I didn't, if you can separate yourself from the comic books, that easily the best thing Fox ever produced with X-Men property attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Deadpool was amazing, so I'm not counting that. But like, of anything they put X-Men or Wolverine in, that was easily the best and a great way to end.
Yeah, and it's one of those types of films where, for a lot of us, and I think Chad, you were on the episode when we talked about this, for a lot of us, we started with these films with Wolverine, like with the first X-Men film back in what, 2000?
Oh yeah, I mean, the resurgence of comic book movies, it began in 2000 with X-Men.
Yeah.
And Hugh Jackman specifically.
Exactly.
I mean, Wolverine was at the time the marquee character in that part of the universe. Hugh Jackman wasn't even supposed to be in the movie.
No.
It was What's-His-Face from Mission Impossible 2. And because he had to go back and reshoot scenes in Mission Impossible 2, they went with their second option, which was Hugh Jackman. But honestly, as a performer, as a person, like, his love for the fans, his love for the character, Hugh Jackman has played an incredible role, not just as Wolverine or as Logan, but in motivating fans to, you know, give comic book movies another chance after the hideous mistake that was Batman and Robin. And he played the character for like 17 years.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Up. Yeah. It's impressive to see that, and it was such a great and wonderful send-off, like I said. And to be able to see the story essentially come to a close, like being able to read a really great book and finally coming to that end where you see the character and the conclusion of that character and what is what's the result of his impact around him, and being able to close that book on this great story. It's wonderful, and I think this is such a great film. And I definitely hold this as one of my top faves of the decade. It's been a great episode. And wrapping this conversation up, because we're already really well into the numbers here. Honestly, let us know, with the new year coming in, what are you looking forward to with 2020? Movies are going to be aplenty. Things are going to be coming out on Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu, Amazon, whatever streaming platform you follow. Maybe there's one that we don't even know about. Let us know on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101, as well as our Instagram at filmlosophy101 as well. And mind you, like we said, I think Corey put it as perfect as can be. Not everything out there is for everybody, but if you connect with it, by all means, let it be yours and make it your own. This has been an awesome conversation with some really great people, and I couldn't have asked for a better 200th episode than the people that are at this table. So I want to thank everybody here. Spence, I will see you next week, of course,
yep,
as well.
Of course.
But I want to throw a huge shout out to Mr. Chad Riley. Chad, thank you for making this podcast possible and being a part of it and still being a part of it. Obviously, you're not gone. You're not, you know.
I'm here.
You're not unavailable. We can pull you in from husbandly duties. We can try to bring you in.
That's right.
But
thanks for calling this one time.
We figured we'd give you a buffer and then we'd pull you back in. But we appreciate you being here tonight. And of course, we look forward to a lot of other future conversations to come in the next year. Corey, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. We appreciate you, man, and everything you guys are doing over at VGB.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, like we said, we want to let you guys know that we hope you have a great and wonderful year. And, of course, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Chad.
I'm happy to be here.
Class dismissed.